Welcome to the HR Room Podcast, the podcast series from Insight HR, where we talk to business leaders from around Ireland and share their advice on how to create the HR systems and workplace culture that's right for your business. For show notes and bonus content, simply visit www.insighthr.ie/podcast. And remember, if you need any HR support, get in touch with us at Insight HR. Whether it's conducting a complex workplace investigation, filling a gap by providing you with a virtual or on-site HR resource, or providing advice via our HR support line, we'll help you resolve whatever human resources challenge your business is facing. Okay, let's get started.
Hi all, and welcome to another episode of the HR Room Podcast. This one falls under the How to Do HR banner and is the first episode in our two-part series on managing poor performance. In this episode, we'll be looking at some of the steps you can take to help prevent poor performance. I'm joined by Mary Cullen, Insight HR's founder and managing director, and Laura Barry, HR consultant with the business. Good afternoon to you both.
Hi, Sarah.
Hi, Sarah.
So just to provide us with a little bit of context for the episode, Laura, when we talk about poor performance, what exactly are we talking about?
Okay, I suppose when we talk about poor performance, Sarah, it is quite a broad term and certainly an area for many employers, unfortunately, that they find themselves having to deal with. Of course, you don't hire someone with a view to having to manage low productivity or low performance down the line, but it does happen. And I suppose it is a very real scenario in the workplace. And managing poor performance, no doubt about it, can be extremely tricky. I don't think I've met one person that will tell you any different. But, you know, lots of different situations can constitute to having to manage poor performance. And certainly an understanding of what it means is necessary for any employer and, of course, the employee too, so that, you know, it can be appropriately recognised and appropriately managed.
And it's an interesting point there too about it being consistent. It's not just, you know, kind of one off.
Once off.
Yeah. But like, where exactly does HR fit in with all of this? Like, Mary, I would have thought that managing performance is down to the managers themselves as opposed to HR. So what exactly is HR's role in all of this?
Sarah, I couldn't agree with you more in that, you know, it is down to the person's manager. It's not the role of HR to actually manage and monitor the performance of individuals within the organization. It just simply isn't possible for them to do it. Although I do know of some HR people that do find themselves constantly pulled in and dragged into this whole area. From a HR perspective, when it comes to, I guess, managing performance or poor performance particularly, it really is an area that they get involved in when things are going wrong, or like Laura says, where there's persistent poor performance and the manager has been unable to correct that behavior or improve the performance of the employee concerned. At that stage, a manager may look at a performance improvement process, which is, you know, part of the informal stages of the disciplinary process. And if someone fails to successfully complete a performance improvement process, the next step may be the formal discipline process. And at that point, HR will always be involved at some level in terms of guiding and mentoring the manager, and maybe, you know, being involved in the disciplinary process through note taking or chairing meetings, or, you know, providing guidance to the management team in relation to that particular situation. They also have a wider role, I guess, in terms of training and developing line management. You know, as you rightly said, Sarah, the responsibility lies with the line manager for performance, but the organization must equip the line manager with the skills to effectively manage performance. And particularly in COVID times where things have changed, because now we're asking managers to remotely manage performance. And certainly in the workplaces of the future, where we're going to have that mix of, you know, on-site and remote workers, you know, we're going to have to think about the ways in which we actually manage performance and the ways in which managers manage it.
Now, Laura, you gave us some examples earlier of poor performance. Do you think that these issues always occur because an employee just simply isn't invested in their work or they don't enjoy it?
You know, not necessarily, Sarah. Sometimes I think it's very obvious and sometimes it's not. And as I said earlier, it's very important to keep that open mind. So there can be underlying reasons for poor conduct or behavioural issues. And, you know, sometimes it could be personal circumstances, a period of feeling unwell, or even something even deeper than all of that. I don't always believe that the reason for poor performance is the responsibility lies with the employee, and that the employee is not invested enough. In some situations, you know, there could be grossly inflated expectations set for an employee, or there's a particular demand on that person relation to the nature of the role. So take, for example, we'll say even sales roles. So certain targets being set, but the position, we'll say, of the market may make it very difficult to deliver on those targets. So despite everything being done, yet not reaching targets, is it fair to say the employee isn't invested enough? And I would say no in that case. But again, it comes back to being realistic about the expectations, the regular reviews, giving regular feedback and so on. You know, you could have a very hardworking employee with an excellent attitude, but you're simply not given the support or the additional training that they might require to bring them up to an acceptable standard or the required skill base. You know, I've had situations, I suppose, where an employee has been hired in one particular role, and then as the company has evolved, so too, I suppose, has the employee's role, which then, I suppose, morphed into something completely not what that employee was trained or suitably qualified for. So to get back to your question, not necessarily is it because the employee isn't invested in their role. And I do think, you know, managers do need to take a degree of responsibility with that as well. I think it's important to say that people are not their performance. And I suppose what I mean by that is, I think, you know, think about the behaviours. It's not about the person. And it can happen that, you know, there's personality clashes, and often, you know, the manager or maybe a colleague can look for opportunities to see that person doing wrong. You take, for an example, a report produced to a line manager on a monthly basis or whatever it may be, and there might be a number of inaccuracies in that report. Straight away in your head, you know, are you labelling a person as being sloppy or lazy or taking a sweeping judgment on that person? And it can be very easy to, I suppose, associate judgments about a person with our views on their perceived lack of performance. So all too often it can happen that we take it by looking at a behaviour and describing that person. So always try to look at the cause, why someone appears not invested in their role. Just again, always keep an open mind and look to the causes.
Yeah, I think, Laura, I listened very recently to a podcast where they were describing attention to detail. And the speakers were talking about, well, you know, attention to detail actually has many different facets. And somebody may be poor at attending to, you know, spelling or grammar, but actually extremely fastidious when it comes to other areas of their performance. So I think always it's important when you're looking at something like a quality or an area of performance that you're really digging deep into that particular area of performance and putting together very real and live examples of where that person's performance is below expectations in the context of the organization. Because in different organizations, they'll have different standards for instance, something as simple as detail orientation. It means a different thing in one organization versus another. So it's so important that they're really honing in very carefully, so that the employee genuinely understands and what it is they need to do or change. And too often I find that people just don't get that opportunity, simply because their manager hasn't spent the time to really drill into it and figure it out.
Mary, just while we're on that topic, I mean, what role do performance appraisals play here? Like, what kind of topics should they include and how often should they happen?
Yeah. I mean, the performance review is extremely important. I'm not a big fan of using the word appraisal. You know, I prefer to look at them as a two-way conversation that happens between a manager and an employee, which is very much geared around, you know, reviewing, of course, the previous performance, but also looking to the future in terms of learning and development, in terms of particular goals and skills that the company may wish the person to attain, and opportunities for development and objective setting, I guess, within their role. So sometimes when it comes to performance appraisals, all we're doing is looking backwards, and maybe not focusing enough on future development. So I think performance appraisals slash reviews are very important. The frequency of them can be problematic. So for instance, if you have an annual performance review and you're going to sit down formally with an employee once a year and look at their performance, and the manager is going to gather up an entire year of data to discuss with the employee, that's one thing. But very often managers focus in on the last couple of weeks, the last couple of months, and that they don't fully review the entire year. If we pull it back and maybe do it twice a year, you know, again, you have the same challenge from a management perspective. And I guess it requires a lot of time and effort and attention to detail. Now, obviously, if you have an online performance management system, it's easier because I guess you're collecting that data as you go, and the whole issue of recency isn't such an issue. But I'm a real believer in regular feedback. And I can't emphasize that enough. A manager really shouldn't be waiting until the end of the year to discuss a whole year of performance. There should be no surprises at that meeting, because the employee ought to be aware of the areas where they perform extremely well and the areas where they're not performing well.
Yeah, it's that kind of coming back to that open communication again and the importance of it and having that kind of two-way dialogue with your employees.
Yeah. And when it comes, I guess, Sarah, back to your question, what kind of topics should it include? I think it's really important that, you know, you're looking at each area of performance, and the objectives and KPIs for the year ahead, as well as learning and development. And often I see learning and development left to the very end of a performance review, and everybody being in a rush just to move on and not really giving that whole area the time and attention it deserves in itself.
Laura, if you were to give three top tips for helping to prevent poor performance, what would they be?
Do you know, I'm a strong advocate, Sarah, for effective recruitment and selection procedures in the first instance. So robust recruitment selection process, and whether that be for new roles or when promoting existing staff, competency-based questioning, take time to define what competencies are required for that role, and then having suitable, I suppose, scenario type questions around that, asking the candidate to give an example of a time they demonstrated X, Y, and Z or whatever it may be. And I do think, you know, it does help to predict behaviours in future situations. You know, you gauge an individual's preferred style of working. So yeah, robust recruitment and selection process. You know, it's a costly mistake to getting it wrong. So that would be my number one. Number two, I would say early detection. So supposing they've been hired and they're recruited, have a probationary policy in place. And I don't just mean your standard clause in a contract, have a policy in place with structured interim reviews scheduled. It's an opportunity, as we said, for constructive feedback within the first few weeks, you know, and the purpose is intended to be positive, a collaborative process and a two-way process. So the employee does need to be aware at the outset of what is expected. We'll say the standards of maybe customer service or the values of the company, the deliverables required by that individual and by the team. So regular feedback, what's working, what's not working, look at action, if any, that may need to be taken. And I mean, what support might need to be put in place to bring that employee or that person to the required standard. So open and honest feedback and possible consequences as well of not meeting the required standard. So all of this should be shared. So that would be my number two. And then number three, I think it's important that employees have an input into defining their objectives for the year ahead. And it all goes back to having the formalized, I suppose, what Mary alluded to, the performance management system or the performance review meeting. Open communication between the employee and the manager, I feel, is key.
Thanks so much for that, Laura. Mary, do you have anything to kind of add to that?
When it comes to giving negative feedback, I often see this as an area where managers struggle and avoid sometimes acting quickly and promptly when they see something. So often, you know, if you talk to a manager about when they first noticed something being wrong, whatever that might be, whether that's attendance, whether that's performance, whether that's attitude and behavior, and then you're moving forward and you're 6, 12 months, 2 years, 5 years down the line and they want to tackle it now. And it's often a huge surprise to the employee who actually up until that point in time thought they were doing just fine. So I think the teaching line managers to give constructive feedback early is really, really important. And, you know, it's easy to say, good job, well done. It's much harder to say, I'm concerned about an area of your performance or I'm concerned about something you're doing at work. And I think managers need an awful lot of coaching and support and mentoring to get that piece right. And that's where I believe HR can step in and really deliver meaningful training for line managers so that they're tackling these kind of issues in a really proactive way.
So thanks to you both for joining us this afternoon. And before we wrap up the episode, I am going to just give you my three key takeaways that I got from our discussion this afternoon. So my first takeaway is that while it might not necessarily be HR's role to manage and monitor performance, HR does have a role to play in supporting management to fulfill their roles. So kind of guiding and mentoring them as they deal with performance issues, but also developing training for them. For them to be able to effectively manage their teams. There's many different types of poor performance. This is my second takeaway now. There's many different types of poor performance and it can show itself in many ways. So absenteeism, lateness, poor quality of work. But however it shows itself, it's really important to dig deep into the issue. So find out what might be the root cause of the issue. It might not necessarily be because an employee isn't invested in their role. There might be a real reason that is preventing them from fulfilling their role or meeting expectations. And then my final takeaway then is that, you know, one of the best ways of preventing poor performance is to have a robust recruitment process and an onboarding strategy. It's extremely important to make sure that the candidate has the required skills and competencies for the role. And if not, then having a plan in place as to how they can develop these competencies. So have a probationary plan, a probation period kind of built in as well. And in the first months, ensure that there's ongoing support and regular feedback given. Just again, kind of underlining the importance of that two-way dialogue there with your employees. So yeah, those are my takeaways from today's episode. So I hope I did it justice. that's it from us. Make sure to tune in next week to the second episode in this two-part series, where we'll be discussing how to actually address poor performance. It can be a tricky one to manage effectively, so make sure you don't miss the episode. Thanks, Mary and Laura.
Thanks, Sarah.
Thanks for joining us today on the HR Room Podcast, the podcast series from Insight HR that helps you create the human resources systems and workplace culture that's right for your business. For show notes and bonus content, go to www.insighthr.ie/podcast. That's www.insighthr.ie/podcast. We'd love it if you subscribe, like, and share the show with any friends and colleagues who are looking for fresh ideas on how to create the ideal workplace for their business. And remember, if you need any HR support, get in touch with us at Insight HR. Whether it's conducting a complex workplace investigation, filling a gap by providing you with a virtual or an on-site HR resource, or providing advice via our HR support line, we'll help you resolve whatever human resources challenge your business is facing. Thanks, and see you soon.